Monty and Wolf Show is once again brought to you by EsportsBet. Head on over to esportsbet.io, sign up using our referral code below, and you'll get a bunch of free DJT to participate in the World's Prediction Series that'll be going across all esports through the end of the year. They're giving up to $10 million away in USDT, and you can win up to $300,000 of it for yourself. You want to follow along with our predictions here on Insight on Esports. Thorne and I do the competitive edge, and we've been doing very well in terms of predictions. So have some fun with us, play for free, or deposit some crypto, whatever you like, and play along with us. We're here for a new episode of the Monty and Wolf Show. Today, we're going to start at the bottom of the mountain that is the LCK, and then we will slowly ascend to the zenith, the peaks, the tip of Mount Olympus, where the gods of T1 and Gen G reside. We will commune with them. We will forecast the future of their rematch this next week. We're going to pick Gen G, guys. Sorry, that's just a spoiler. I know Wolf's mind already. He didn't even tell me, but I know what he's going to say because he's a Malder over T1 and their scrappy victories. But they pulled out a scrappy victory last time. It's not going to stop us from predicting that they will lose again. Then they will inevitably win in an infuriating fashion, and fans will get mad at us. I can see the future.
we'll get into it when we get into it. But let's start with the bottom teams.
Yeah, so the story this week, about the bottom teams is that Nongshim is about as high quality as the fast ramen that they produce when it comes to comparison to real cuisine. They are heavily processed, made out of garbage, it's less than the sum of their parts somehow. And Reddit Breon, by record, the worst team in the league, but on a hard week, actually stealing games. And potentially, it was kind of scary there for a minute against T1, where they might have actually been able to beat T1. Had some really, with the games that they did win, they snowballed really smoothly out of the early game, looked like a significantly improved team. And then there's Hanwha Life, who's just sort of existing and losing games. So I know you really hate Nongshim, Wolf. That's what you said to me.
With
infinite passion.
Rather than hate, I'm just very disappointed.
He didn't tell me he hated them, but I was just making that up for
drama. I
like to send the fans after Wolf. That's what I like to do.
I like the ramyun as well. Like, it's very, like, it's ramyun, so, like, it's low quality, but I mean,
I also eat it, so that's fine.
It gets done sometimes.
I do like Shin Ramyun Black. I do. It's a guilty pleasure. So there you go, Nongshim. Your advertisement is working. Congratulations.
Because sometimes when you're like, we all on a day where you just don't have anything else to eat, sometimes you just put it on, and it goes with a lot of other food really well. But unlike the Shin Ramyun, which is kind of a guilty pleasure for us every now and then, there isn't really much pleasure in watching the Nongshim games these days. There isn't even the like, ooh, I really miss BDD. I want to turn on some BDD gaming recently and
I've never
check it out.
Wanted to turn on a BDD game. I've always disliked him as a player. So,
well, they did take one game off of KT, but I think that was in a lot of ways on KT more than it was a success for Nongshim. Their last game they played where they drafted Victor, I could see the idea where they're trying to, you know, outpace the Sylas in lane and hopefully scale. They're like, we picked Ashe, so we need some damage. But then they were not going to build full damage Victor or full damage Ashe or full damage Gangplank. So they had like three half DPSs in that game. And that was the most sad and tragic game for me for this week. There's always a lot of sad and tragic Nongshim games, unfortunately.
It wasn't the game where Keen got a 4-0 start as Fiora and then refused to side lane. That was pretty tragic.
A Nongshim game. That was the most tragic game of the week, but it was not the most tragic Nongshim game.
Okay, sorry. Glad we made that distinction. Because I thought you were implying that KT versus Nongshim game 3 was the most tragic game of the week when it was actually Liv Sandbox versus Kwangdong Freaks game 2.
Yeah, we'll get into that one a little bit later.
Where in 50 minutes, Keen forgot that side lanes existed.
He hung out with his team a lot. He was not an independent Fiora. He definitely was not.
Especially because he had a Talia mid who could, I don't know, appear in his lane to help him magically. And that didn't happen either. Anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of sad and depressing things that happened this week, so it's hard, you know, it's hard to get through it. But I think that Nongshim, I've been talking to the other casters about this a little bit, and I think that the problem with Nongshim is there's a very clear, and I know there are a lot of issues around the Rift for this team, but there's a very clear weak point in the support role, and like it is so like glaringly clear, and it has been since spring season, where both Peter and Effort were just playing really badly all season long. And we were like, oh man, this is basically a super team. It's not quite like Gen.G level super team. It's like a demi super team with all these players that are really strong. And we're like, okay, it's Kana who only plays strong side. It's Effort and Ghost. They play weak side on the bottom. Like, this seems to make sense. But Effort's performances were abysmal. Peter's efforts to fix Effort by coming in were also mostly not good at all. And then they eventually picked up Snowflower, which is like, I don't know who thought that was going to be the answer.
That's a throwback from you, Wolf.
Yeah. I just don't know who thought that was going to be the answer.
I mean, anything is better than Effort. Anything is better than Effort. I can't watch this guy anymore.
So if you are Kana or BDD or even Dread, who had a fantastic year on Afrika last year, how do you... And even if you're Ghost, who like was never a star player, but he did his job very well, if you're constantly like going into scrims and like this one guy keeps messing it up, or this one guy keeps underperforming, or two guys who are in the same role, like both Peter and Effort, who are not playing well, I think that's like what broke this team. Is like, oh man, we're just dragged down by this guy. And like everybody, I personally think there is probably some sort of drama or beef or infighting in this team. To where that if Nongshim was a Western team, I bet you there would be like Twitter beef, like we would know these players hate each other. There might be fines or something. Like from the outside looking in, just watching these guys in the studio, seeing how they perform, how they interact with each other, how Dread is crying after losses. Like I think there is something going on. We'll never find out because it's a Korean org and everyone's going to keep it very quiet. And like is just. If there is super beef, we'll never know. And like everyone,
well,
like, that
would be
Wolf suggested this, but
that would be against the Nongshim branding because there is in fact no beef in the Nongshim ramen products. So it's a violation of their contract to have beef. It's not representative. It's just bland, dehydrated noodles.
I think that if you compare though this team to Hanwha and Fredip Rion, like they're just middling to weak players all on average, like across the board. You don't go like, man, Lava's really holding us back. You might say, man, Henna really sometimes holds us back, but also Henna has some pretty high highs compared to the rest of his roster, so he's had his moments. You look at you know, the Hanwha Life roster, you're like, yeah, Karis is like pretty decent. Dudu is one of the best laners in the LCK randomly. You know, he's doing all right. And you know, you have a somewhat serviceable bottom lane with Chani coming in. But I think for Nongshim, it just always has been all year long. You have one player or two players, but mostly one player who is really not doing well. They purchased Snowflower in the middle of a season. This is like, I think has happened literally once since I joined the LCK, where a player comes in mid-season, is like imported basically back to the LCK. It's never happened really. And then he is like benched after two games because he also is just not doing it. And like, I don't know how you can keep your mental straight. Like if you're Ghost, you're like, what the hell, man? Just give me one and make him do it right. I don't know. It's just so depressing that way. And I think that if you are these players who have seen such high peaks, like for BDD, this might be a career breaking season. You might never be on a top three team again because your individual performance is pretty bad. Your team's performance is also holding you back. You were in the semifinals of Worlds. You were one game away from being in a World Finals last year, and now you're 0-7 on your best champion Azir because you just can't pull it off with this team. You just can't do it.
Yeah, I think that's the disappointing part, is you would think that this would be a favorable meta for BDD. I mean, obviously, like it's not really a Zoe meta, which is one of his other signature champions, but certainly the Azir is a champion he's been known for years. And it's not even like he's not even good enough right now, and his team isn't good enough to pull that off. And like you say, the names on Nongshim, surely this should be a mid table team, at least with these names. And it, like Kana coming off you know, having a strong year with T1. Remember, he was the one who was chosen after spring split to start over Zayas, and Zayas was kept around. I mean, now we see why. Like, Zayas is, some people are saying Zayas is the best player in the world right now, which is lavish praise, but you know, I on Summoning Insight, that's what Nelson Singh, who's one of the coaches for Excel, said. He thinks he's just straight up the best player in the world. And this is a guy who loves the LPL, loves LPL top laners. So that's especially interesting coming from him. So you see why they managed to keep him around instead of Kana, and they passed on having Kana. But that doesn't mean that Kana was a bad player last year. He was pretty good. Yeah. As you say, Dredd was pretty good. BDD was another player who made it, as you say, to the semifinals of Worlds. Now, he wasn't great in LCK, but he did mega pop off at Worlds. He was really good at Worlds.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they lived and died by him. In that semifinals, the first two and arguably three games were completely carried by him. And then the last two games, he completely ran it down because he was trying to make the same super plays. Like, and then, like, he was the reason why they almost went to the finals, and then he was the reason why they did not at the same time. And that's the BDD inconsistency that we've always criticized him for. But his clutch factor when he actually hits it is very good. But he hasn't hit it, like, even one time this year because he's on this roster. And, like, Dredd also carried so many early games for Afrika throughout last year. Even in the Pantheon jungle meta, that's always what I associate Dredd with. Like, when I think Dredd, I think Pantheon jungle because he was so good in that meta. And
might be coming back, interestingly.
Yeah, it could make a return, which would make me happy because I thought it was really fun.
It sure looks like they're making some buffs that might make that a possibility.
Yeah, I think if we look at these three teams, you know, like, Nongshim stands out because they have the really expensive roster of these three. Like, Atlas put it in a really good way yesterday when we were talking about this. He said, basically, you know, if you make a Counter-Strike reference, right now Hanwha Life and Frederick Brion are on their eco round, and they're, like, gonna hit a Thrifty, you know, like, it's like very, it's
that's
very
a Valorant
much
reference.
Well, yeah, I mean, Thrifty is a Valorant reference, but, like, the idea of an eco round, like, it's going well. Like, Frederick Brion almost beat T1, like, you know, it's a budget season, whereas it's full buy for Nongshim, and they're having, like, a worse season. So that's the tragedy of it for the org. That's a tragedy of it for those players who were full bought into this roster, who just are stuck here until next year or whenever their contracts expire. I'm actually now kind of curious about that when these contracts
expire.
Oh my
god, Coco's one of their coaches? I didn't know that. Crazy.
Yeah. They used to have coach that was the Genji coach for Heroes of the Storm, Noblesse, who was a very famous tank player, and he was coaching, and I wasn't really ever sure whether that was a good or bad thing, because I thought maybe there was some nepotism going on potentially, because, like, Rich and he were on the same team, and I'm like, I don't know what this means. Like, it was Rich's old coach, but I don't know how much of an impact he had, but he left after last year, or was fired. I don't know what happened there, but he's no longer on the team and hasn't been the same since. So maybe he was doing a lot of good things, but I'm looking at contracts. Yeah, everybody's contract ends, like, literally the whole team, they're all of them, including Snowflower, all end on November 21st, 2022. So this team is definitely not staying together. Not even a little bit, I don't think.
Well, that's crazy. They actually have a really OG player coaching staff. They have two old Zenix players, Irayan and Comet. And both of them transitioned to coaching a while back. Irayan obviously coached a bunch of LCS teams as well. And then Coco, famously, of DJ. So interesting that that this would be happening, because it seems like they have people with a lot of coaching experience and professional playing experience. Maybe the players are not listening to the coaches. Don't probably think the coaches probably aren't trash, given their legacy, but who knows? Something clearly.
Yeah, I don't think this is a coaching problem. I think this is a internal issue that's happened based on the fact that they couldn't slot in their proper support, and the players are fed up and they're frustrated, and, like, I don't know, maybe that's not actually happening. Like, this is my speculation, but I just, when I see players crying on stage and having, like, basically panic attacks, it looks like, you know, like, and having, you know, midlife crisis, mid-career crisis, you know, this is not like when you're losing a regular season game, even if you're like a bottom table team, like that's not enough to make most players cry. You know what I mean? Like you lose a semifinal where you were favored and like you got reverse swept, like that's when you cry. Like you don't cry because you lost like your sixth regular season game in a row, unless something is going on, right? I mean, that's my, that's kind of my feelings on it. I've watched a lot of pro gamers cry over the years, and like this is usually not where you see it.
Wolf's,
you know,
crying,
I mean?
Analysis. I see. Well, it's like I've seen so many Koreans cry in my time, and this is what it means in this specific instance. That's top tier.
It's kind of like where I'm at.
I can't argue that you have perhaps the most Korean crying experience of any esport caster across multiple esports, team-based, 1v1-based, Korean crying expert, Wolf Schroeder. I think it's interesting, too, because this team is now, what, on an 8-loss streak? Like, they got a couple wins in week two, and otherwise they start, and that's devastating, right? They start the season 2-2. They lose to DRX and T1 in week one. They bounce back against Kwangdong and Hanwha Life, pick up two wins, and then that's it. It's just been it. They have the longest active loss streak, even longer than T1's win streak right now, so the longest active any streak within the league. And, you know, the Nongshim Fredit Breon match that's coming up. I think you got to favor Fredit Breon. They're probably going to get slapped by Liv Sandbox this coming week too. So, doesn't really look like there's going to be a lot of relief in sight. They then play DRX and T1, and then back to Hanwha Life and Kwangdong Freaks. So maybe they can repeat a victory against one of those two teams, but it's certainly not easy for them moving forward.
Yeah, it's really not. Not much else to say like about it.
Because you were pretty high on them before the season, right?
I was. Well, I felt like,
I mean, it's not unreasonable. I feel like
they've been given enough time to decide whether they wanted it to be Effort or Peter, which was again this big sticking point. They chose Effort, and we were like, all right, so now they know what this team wants to do. They can try to fix Effort's problems in the bottom lane, and Effort had a pretty okay year last year with Prince on Live Sandbox. Like, we know this guy is not actually normally this bad. I don't even like to use the word bad, but like in this case, he's usually not this bad, because it has been bad. And, you know, I thought maybe, okay, the synergy problems, the lack of coordination we saw in spring, like, we should be past that. They had all of the long MSI break. We had a pretty long offseason between, you know, spring and summer this season because of MSI and because we were going to have all those qualifiers for Asia games that didn't happen. Nope. They look the same, if not worse. And I was just shocked about that, you know, at first. And now it's just what we come to expect, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Fredit Breon, because they started abysmally, and yet this past week, they had a really tough schedule. They played against DRX and T1. They convincingly won a game in both of the series. Like, not close. They took some... In the DRX game, they did have an extremely advantageous level one that got them a big lead. But they had to carry that lead through the game, and they snowballed it really efficiently. And it was, honestly, like, a good game to watch. Like, it was an impressive performance. And then we saw the same thing in their first game against T1. They come out to an early lead. They play aggressively. They do something that's hard, which is to play around a Kalista and properly snowball. They succeed in doing that. They get the Dragon Soul. They're macroing correctly. They don't make a lot of mistakes. And they kind of just crush T1. And then in game three of the T1 series, they very nearly win it through some late game vision play. And, you know, it was Faker kind of catching Delight out that ends the game, unfortunately for them. But it was another game where the win condition was real. They were behind for most of the game, but they managed to claw their way back into it. So I guess what's impressive to me is that Fredit Breon at least looks like, when you give them an advantage, they have a capability of playing the game out cleanly. And then even when they're at a disadvantage right now, they're making decisions that allow them to be competitive, which is totally different than what we've seen this year. And they're doing it against good teams.
Yeah, I don't know what like snapped for Fredit Breon, or what clicked, I guess maybe is the proper way to say this, like where they suddenly are all on the same page and making really good macro decisions. But In my experience with Lava, and I know he's been around for quite some time, like he was like a support substitute for T1 and then finally transitioned into being a mid laner over time. But he was not really known for good macro play. He was known for assassin play, like his LeBlanc, you know, and we've seen him play like assassin mids and stuff like that. We've seen him play like Aurelia mid every now and then, and like that's kind of his thing. Like, he's very similar to Closer in that regard. This Closer's more famous for his assassin play. He's starting to finally branch out to more like control mages and scaling champion picks. Lava also was randomly known for his Corki. That was the like one non-assassin pick where we're like, oh, okay, yeah, he's very good at that. But then on his rise in this series, he made every right decision with his macro and was able to... It is actually the second time this season where he made a really good choice on a split push. Like, he won a game split pushing mid on Azir just, I think, 2 weeks ago, where he is able to call in the shot call, like, hold them there on Drake, like, stop them from backing, I'm going to win the game, and he did. And, like, he's really just suddenly leveled up as a macro mid laner, which... I just kind of wrote him off. I'm like, yeah, you're going to shoot the big quirky rockets and like you're going to play the really cool assassin play. And you're going to maybe pop off on a Kali like that one time. But I feel like he's just suddenly kind of five head big braining it. And the rest of the team is playing around him. And they played around Henna's Kalista. Henna is Henna a good Kalista player? No. Does Henna really like Kalista and plays Kalista even when it's not a Kalista meta? Yes. So it's comfort for him. Like, they figured it out. I really liked what they did with this draft. They played around bottom side. They have Realm Orbs. Guma Caria, arguably a weak point of T1 right now, especially in the laning phase. If he doesn't get his
Draven. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that because that's very interesting later on. We'll get to
and,
that.
And I don't know. I just thought Fred Brion came with a cool idea. And like, the whole series I was casting that with Valdez, I was like, just kind of complimenting Frederic Brion, because I was like, wow, this all makes sense. I don't think they'll win because they'll probably drop the ball because they're Frederic Brion and it's T1. And then like, I eventually had to be like, all right, well, we have to stop pretending like they could win because they are winning. And then they won. And we were like, well, they won the game.
Yeah. Even Morgan, who has been much maligned in the past, has been looking better recently, arguably one of the better players on this roster. I don't know if this is going to last, if the Frederic Brion's going to turn back into a pumpkin at midnight, but at least for the time being, they're not the worst team. When you compare, they're only the third worst team right now, even though they do have the worst record. You have to think that as we move into the coming weeks, that especially this next week, they play Kwangdong and Nongshim. They could win both of those matches. That's not out of the question. Especially since Kwangdong seems to have cooled off a little bit themselves. They got, well, I guess we can talk about that game too. Like, they did have a huge lead.
Yeah, I mean, Kwangdong is actually in the bottom team conversation now. Like, how far away are they from the bottom three? Like, is the real question we have to ask.
Yeah, I was going to say they didn't get clapped by Live Sandbox, but they didn't do anything with their lead. And that's pretty stark difference to Frederic Brion, which was macroing properly around their lead. Like, I don't know how Keen can get four kills on Fiora when there's a Talia in the game and you just don't split push and fritter away your advantages for 50 straight minutes.
There was a Baron that Kwangdong could have taken in that game as well, where they got a pick, they were all there and had vision control. And then that was the one time Keen was like all side lane and he got an inner turret, if I'm not mistaken, the top inner turret. Then he backed and then they were like, and then they just rotated back slowly over to the Baron where they had given full control of the Baron and vision of it. While they all just kind of went mid for a second, then backed when they could have just taken the Baron. Then they lost the subsequent fight and the Baron and the game was unwinnable from that point. And Prince ended up getting six items and selling his boots. And
I mean, he had 568 CM.
He double flame horizoned both of the, like, he had 200 more than both the Senna, Tom, Kench, and CS put together. And Duff gave him all his farm, to be fair. But, like,
I mean, that's what Jove's job is on this team. He's the lowest economy top laner in the LCK. Like, his job is to give Prince farm. But yeah, I mean, the first game, very convincingly in favor of Live Sandbox. Live Sandbox continue to look like they're going to potentially make worlds. It's down. We've talked about this before, but you know, there's it's kind of a grab bag. Whether you prefer Dom Juan DRX or Live Sandbox, pick two out of three to make the world championship. But yeah, this team in particular is super fun to watch. As we said before, they're really very entertaining, even at their most stupid, which is part of the entertainment. What is Kroko going to do is a great question in their games.
Will he pick Vi, even if it doesn't make sense? The answer is yes. Will he still win with it? Actually, more than half of the time. Will teams just randomly ban Vi when it doesn't make sense against him? Yeah, even though, like, he only barely wins more than half of the time with it, and it doesn't usually make sense. Teams just don't want to deal with it because you just don't know what Kroko's going to do. Every time I see the Vi ban when there's, like, a really strong pick for Live Sandbox, I'm like, okay, I mean, I guess he doesn't get Vi, but Prince gets his Aphelios or whatever the case may be. I'm always like, oh, don't ban Vi. Like, I know it's Kroko, but... And then if they don't ban it, Kroko plays it, and it doesn't make sense, and we're like, okay, this isn't really strong, but... Okay, it's not a dive comp, but all right. Like, he's just going to get a kill randomly with it. Kroko does what he wants, which is why the more games that go by, like, I trust Live Sandbox more in some ways, but I think they're a very one-dimensional team because they play only around Prince, and Kroko doesn't always do what makes the most sense. And I feel like, as a result, DRX are a more multifaceted team where they can play scaling, they can also play tempo, Pyosik is looking better, he can be both measured but also crazy like Kroko can. At first, I really wanted Live Sandbox to go because I was like, all right, I want new blood in Worlds. I want to see a team that hasn't sent these players to Worlds before go there and show what the LCK has in terms of its new talent. But now I'm like, okay, Live Sandbox, you're really good at one thing, but we don't know what patch Worlds is going to be on, so maybe I don't want you to be my representative.
I do, purely for the entertainment factor. Like, it doesn't really matter to me how well Live Sandbox does, because they will provide excellent entertainment. And they'll just be in a group, like they'll make it through play-ins and they'll just randomly be in a group, and then they'll just like beat the eventual world champion in that group and then just lose to a terrible team, and it'll be great fun. I mean, I think if we're talking about Live Sandbox, their first game against Gen G, they really looked like they were going to win that. If I had to identify some problems with Live Sandbox now beyond what we've already discussed, I look at Closer, and sometimes I feel like he just doesn't know how to macro. Like, he'll get a big lead, and I know he's really young. He's like 18 or something like that. But he needs a lot of work in terms of his mid and late game decision making, because in that game, he was getting so antsy, like using his Aurel to try and like catch Chovy on LeBlanc and then not having it up for a crucial team fight, not making picks that made sense, like going too deep at times as well. And I feel like this was a really, I mean, it was Live Sandbox had a pretty massive lead in this game, and by all means, probably should have beaten Gen G in game one of the series.
Oh yeah, that series was, I mean, that first game was one of the most exciting games we've had all year. It was very back and forth, like until the Nexus actually died, like no one could be 100% sure that the game was going to go one way or the other. Yeah, Closer also, I think, relies on Kroko a lot, and the leads he usually gets are based on Kroko kind of pathing towards him quite significantly, which sometimes comes at the expense of Prince getting the leads that he should have on a lot of champions, which is why I think Prince hasn't been able to find the same success on tempo-based bottom laners like the Kalista or the Lucian, where you're trying to get a nice lead down there, have that extra prio, then try to snowball and get a strong mid-game. Prince has done it against weaker teams, but against stronger teams, he hasn't been able to find success with those, only finding success on late-game carries. I think that's part of the reason why is because Kroko is kind of attached to Closer a little bit through the early game. And sometimes it works, like when he randomly gets two kills on Akali into Lissandra yesterday, where I'm like, why did you pick Akali here? That doesn't make sense to me. And then he gets two kills, and we're like, well, all right. I guess it doesn't matter anymore, but you're very lucky that this happened.
But yeah, I think if you guys want to watch a game that was really good that you might not otherwise because it was just a 2-0 for Gen G. Definitely look at that Gen G versus Liv Sandbox game one. Look at the whole series. The whole series was actually interesting because Peanut picked Morgana Jungle in game number two, which I really enjoyed.
I thought it was also like a pretty strong potential flex pick as well into the mid lane. Even though Morgana mid isn't a traditionally strong champion right now, in a meta like this where you're so focused on the scaling of your AD carry, like Morgana mid could have just been fine the same way Seraphine mid can be fine, has good wave clear, and obviously is super strong against Poppy, whether it's being played in the mid or the jungle. So I really liked it, and I think if you have obviously Black Shield against Ahri, you're going to feel pretty good. So it was kind of a deterrent pick there as well, if it, you know, was going to be that mid flex. And the way they picked it towards the end of the draft, like, made you wonder. I personally, me and Atlas, we were on the desk that day and we were talking about it. We both thought it was very flexible. But then when we had the interview with Peanut, he was like, 100% this is a Poppy counter, is the only reason why I picked it. Like, so maybe they were considering the flex, but it seems like probably not actually in actuality. But still, I thought it was a beautiful pick.
I think that it serves a lot of purposes in the composition, because the composition was Gnar top lane with Morgana jungle, Ryze, Jinx, and Tahm Kench. And the thing that the Morgana, there's several things that Morgana does well. Obviously, like, you can absorb the Poppy ult with the Black Shield, which is incredibly important because you just slap that on whoever's in the front line and just have them intentionally take it. The other thing you can do is offers insane counter engage. But when you're having, when you have a Gnar and a Ryze, and they're both running teleport, or will be one, with Unsealed Spellbook with Ryze, right? You basically, with the Jinx Tahm Kench, have a 1-3-1 composition where you have insane wave clear and pressure with the Morgana, where they just can't siege between Jinx and Morgana, and you can push waves really, really fast. And that way you can provide map-wide pressure by having your Gnar and the Ryze in the side lanes, which is really, really helpful, especially against like a lower mobility AD carry. Like, if Prince is there on Aphelios trying to clear out a wave, there's a big threat of like a Jinx W, like a Zap or Morgana Q catching you out, or even the Victor as well. So it's really difficult. And the other thing that Morgana does is just has insane synergy with Ryze, because if Ryze roots you and the Morgana's ganking, you are getting rooted for like 4 or 5 seconds. And then you
And the DPM of Morgana when you have a rooted target plus Ryze's DPM is just really high. Like, or DPS rather. Like, but like that damage throughput is very high. And so like, I also think Morgana could be, her clear got nerfed and it is not very good, but I think it's still good enough as long as you're a top jungle player and you know how to path correctly and you know how to like hit your timings with your ganks and farm a little bit of Dark Harvest. We were tracking his Dark Harvest that game. It felt like he was getting a ton of value, but in reality not actually that much. Like, he didn't get that much effective extra damage off of it, but I mean, you still take it as Morgana. I'm not saying it was the wrong rune choice, but like, that wasn't really the big factor here. I think it was the utility that Morgana brings. And like, we're in a meta where it's melee junglers who run at you, and Morgana, if she binds any of the meta junglers, like Poppy notwithstanding, but Lee Sin, Xin Zhao,
Viego,
okay, that's the list of meta junglers, Wukong, any of these junglers gets hit, they're literally useless. They will absolutely do nothing. They cannot do anything. They are functionally champions that run at you, and when she says, you can't run at me, they're like, shit.
Yeah, I mean, she has insane disengage too. And also, the thing about Peanut was he took Treasure Hunter and Futures Market, which we've seen Canyon take, didn't take First Strike. Although, I do think you could take First Strike. I do think you could do that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's all right. Yeah.
If you're not getting a lot of value out of Dark Harvest, I think there's a world where you could take First Strike. But this is what Canyon did on Taliyah. And we saw how fast you could get items. And I was watching this game, and Peanut on like first back had his Magic Pen, his Sork Shoes. And then he like comes back at like 12 minutes with Sork Shoes and a Leandre's. I was like, holy shit. Like, wow. You know, this is going to be really annoying for people to deal
with. I was a Morgana abuser when she was meta last year. Like, I was like, wow, this is free. Like, this is actually so easy. It is the easiest jungle clear. Like, when she had really good jungle clear, you just run around the map. You don't even have to like kite or anything. You don't even have to pay attention. You could be like texting your friend and also like beating the enemy jungle at farm and then just walk up to lanes and be like, oh, I hit Q, like you're dead. She is just so easy to play well, especially when you get ahead. And then when you get your fast Sorc shoes, like you said, you actually do so much damage with just how her W works. Her Black Pool just actually will burn through people. Then you get Leandre's, and like even in team fights that go long, like your DPS is super high.
Yeah.
So I liked it.
It's also just very annoying because the combination of Leandre's and Demonic Embrace, which is what Peanut built, is like, it's so hard to defend turrets when she's slapping that down and just slowly chunking you out. And that's where the 1-3-1 could work really well, or a 4-1 with the Ryze in the side lane. So there's a lot of, I really liked this composition, and I think it's interesting that Peanut wants to pull this out as a pocket pick, considering he created the horrific, poppy abuse situation. But I think this says a lot about Peanut as a jungle meta leader right now, which is really important because he spawned this poppy build and showed why it's strong, like why phase rush, chem tank, hexflesh, yeah, poppy is so fucking good. And now he's like, I also have the answer to it. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and like he really is one of the global leaders in the jungle meta, both through his creative pathing as well as the way that he is debuting champions and then countering the champions he debuted. It's fun. It's fun to watch.
We saw like kind of the debut of Morgana this week, and then we saw, I mean, it was only one game, but I think we will definitely see it attempted again before the season is over, unless Poppy just completely falls out and Hexflash is disabled in the LCK, so we are seeing it a little bit less. But also, we saw the debut of Nocturne jungle this week, which was much less interesting and much less impactful, but played several times and didn't feel like any of those games were really about the Nocturne at all. So I'm still kind of lukewarm on it. I didn't feel like it was very good or strong or impactful in the games it was played. I like to think of Nocturne often as a side lane protector, like, because if you are side laning deep, Nocturne is just like, well, I can also be there at a moment's notice. So if you want to kill this guy, especially if it's like a Gnar, then you're going to have to bring a lot of people. So then we just win the cross map. Like, I think that can be a good reason why he's strong, but
I liked it in the T1 game where they played it into Fredabrion, where they had Stridebreaker into Jinx and Corki, and there really wasn't a lot of peel on the side of Fredabrion, and he has a spell shield as well, so he deals with Poppy somewhat effectively if he can like tank her a little bit. So I don't know, like, I think that if you're playing into the Gwen, Corki, Jinx, Rakan, Poppy comp, like, the Nocturne was pretty good. I enjoyed it in that context. I don't know if I enjoy it in every single context that it might appear in, but he built Stridebreaker and Anathema's Chains, which is, you know, his purpose is just to be disruptive, sit in the back line, and be as annoying as possible and tank damage.
Yeah. Like, Nocturne is sadly like not a fun assassin anymore. He's just very annoying to play against.
I prefer him this way.
Yeah, well, I mean, assassins are ultimately very boring for pro play in general because they're so one-dimensional. He killed him. It was not fun for the player who died, and there wasn't a lot of counterplay, or he failed to kill him and he's dead now and it's very boring. Like, there's not a lot of not all assassins are boring, but like, you know, assassin like LeBlanc can be extremely skillful and very fun to watch. And like, it's not always, and there is a lot of counterplay. So some assassins like Nocturne, if he could just ult somebody in the back line and then instantly delete them, which he has in some metas,
sure,
that's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. All right, so we're climbing the mountain now. We've talked a little bit about Gen.G and T1. We will shadowbox that matchup in a minute. But I think we have to talk about the mid-table right now, which we talked a lot about KT last week, and I don't think that there is a lot more to say considering they beat up on two of the worst teams in the league. So I think
arguably beat up on Nongshim. Like, that series was closer than it should have been. But
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is what we expect.
That's all KT. We have to say.
That's what we expect from KT overall. But in the meantime, DRX did have a tough week last week where they lost to T1 and KT. But then they immediately come back, and although they dropped that first game to Fred at Brion, they then beat Dom Juan Kia, which I think I was, like, I didn't think it was very heavily favored for Dom Juan, but I did think that it was in Dom Juan Kia's favor, given their current form. And part of this, what was so interesting, was that DRX was more unpredictable than they have been, especially because they ran deft as Yasuo with Barrel on Senna, which is something we've seen from T1 earlier this season. But DRX just absolutely dominated that bot lane and played a really fun game based around these.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was really well coordinated. And this is the kind of callback I'm making, you know, when I'm talking about DRX showing so much flexibility in draft. Like, I can't imagine Live Sandbox ever trying to pull this off. And I don't think they have the experience the veteran nature of the players that are on DRX.
Well, like, I can't imagine. I'm surprised Deft wanted to do this. This is not a very Deft-like move.
But Deft has really been branching out, I think, this year. It goes back to, like, one interview early on in spring where he was like, yeah, this is my last year. I'm playing with, like, no regrets. I'm just going to try everything. I'm not going to worry about, like, what my win rate is at the end. I just want to actually win hard. And, like, if I lose, I want to lose hard, too, basically, is what he said. Like, he's like, I'm not going to play with any regrets. I'm just going to play with no fear. And I think that has really been reflected in this play, for better or worse, this season, but usually for better. And that was a really fun game to watch, the Yasuo, because we'd also seen Carrier play it, with Guma on the Senna, and I think that the execution here was very similar. And also, DRX dropping a game to Fred at Brion doesn't feel as bad when you see how Fred at Brion performed in general this week.
Well,
after also bringing T1 to the brink.
I mean, DRX. There are some. I would also add that there are some. Other factors. So first off, DRX was playing with Juhan, number one.
Yes.
Second off, they completely griefed a level one and then got destroyed during that level one and lost three flashes. And then Deft immediately gets ganked at level two and then dies, and because he doesn't have flash and he's Ezreal. So, I mean, it was a train wreck. And yeah, Fred at Brion just ran it very smoothly into a win, but that's why we have best of threes, is so that stupid things like that don't actually ruin a series.
Yeah. I mean, imagine best of ones in the LCK. That would be terrible. imagine, like, best of ones in any competitive. I mean, I know a lot of leagues do play best of one, but, like, in terms of strategy,
they're trash.
I mean, like, if I even try to imagine, like, StarCraft being played in best of ones, I'm like, ooh. Now, in Pro League, it was cool because, like, it was a best of one between each player, but it was, like, teams versus teams. So it was a cool best of one angle. But anyway, well, I'm just really glad we don't have best of ones in the LCK.
I mean, why was that surprising? That was Deft's first game on Yasuo ever. And this is a guy who's played over 900 professional games. So pretty unique that he would reach this. And by the way, I just looked, too. He's only played Mordekaiser as a melee champ, and he's played six games of Mordekaiser back in the old horrible Mordekaiser meta, and that's it. Every other champion he has played has been a ranged champion, even though he has played some mages, obviously, in his time, because that was meta, unfortunately, for a while. And, you know, sometimes you still see the odd Ziggs pop up here and there or what have you, but pretty amazing that he's only had seven games on melee bots, and we just saw his first non-Mordekaiser game ever. And you wouldn't say this is meta. So Deft has typically been a very meta poke AD carry player. That's been his identity. And so I really enjoyed being able to watch the Yasuo and him perform very well on it. I mean, they got an advantage right away in that lane and just never let up.
I think a big turnaround for DRX also was that, like, I personally didn't think Juhan was very good. I thought he was serviceable at best. Like, I'm not trying to speak ill of the guy, but, like, compared to Pioshek, who has had way higher highs, I was very disappointed when he was subbed in. But then in the interview where Pioshek popped off and picked up, like, back-to-back MVPs, He was like, yeah, I asked for a break. I was not in the right headspace. I wanted to take some time off. So I asked the coaching staff if I could take a few series off, try to get my mind straight. And it clearly helped him. And I think that's very rare, actually, in especially Korean esports for players to take a break and then come back better. Like, usually taking a break hurts players' momentum.
There's also really no concept of mental health in Korea. Like, just culturally, going and seeing a therapist or admitting to mental health issues is not culturally acceptable.
Yeah, I think, like, an easier way to put it almost is, like, it's almost as if you're admitting you're crazy to tell people that you need help. Oftentimes it's a big problem in Korea, actually. I think it's slowly starting to be acknowledged, and I think it is going in the right direction. I've seen that there are more people, actually even celebrities, like, being more open about talking about mental health and stuff, so I think it's a good thing. But yeah, it is very rare. It's very unusual to tell your coach, like, I just need some time off. And it's very rare for a coach to also grant said time off in an important regular season like this, where losing those matches with Juhan might have actually, you know, cost them their standings in regular season, might have hurt their playoff seed. So I thought it was, like, kind of a weird and unusual but beautiful thing that Pyosik was kind of on the downturn, says he needs a break, takes a break, comes back, and has the best series of the season, in my opinion, at least of the second round robin, of course, here. And, like, I just thought, like, wow, Pyosik came back in a big way. And I think Pyosik is a very emotional and momentum based player. When he's having a good month, he's having a good month. When he's having a bad month, he's having a bad month. So that gave me some hope that maybe DRX does end up having a strong finish here in the regular season, does end up having maybe a top four run in the LCK, and then goes to Worlds, because we'll have that gauntlet, of course, later on, where they're very likely, unless something goes horribly wrong, to participate. So I'm feeling good about Pyosik right now.
Look, I used to really dislike Pyosik. In the last couple of years, I felt very good about Pyosik. I think he was last year, I feel like he was one of the bright spots on his team, and he was kind of in prison. Right. So I appreciated him last season on a bad roster, and I thought he really shone. And this year, remember that this is the second matchup that they played against Damwon Kia. He has out jungled Canyon in both series that they played against Damwon Kia. That's not a hot take. The first game was when Canyon, like, first picked Belveth in the last one, if you recall, because they thought Pyosik was playing it a lot in solo queue, and they thought, oh, holy shit, Pyosik, they must know something about scrims, that Pyosik is like a Belveth god or something like that in scrims. So they try and take it away. He plays Trundle, completely crushes them, and then he dominated Canyon in game three of that series on Poppy, and we see a little bit more of that in this week. He seems to really perform against Canyon for whatever reason, and I think he deserves a lot of praise, because now this season, DRX is going to be 2-0 over Damwon Kia. I thought Damwon would come in and look better, but that first game was really rough right from the get-go because of the way Duckdom and Kellen were playing. I also thought DRX was very clever in their draft, because they saw the Yuumi, right? And they had already picked the Twitch pick was the last pick on red side. And Twitch, obviously, with his ultimate, not going to be great into a Yasuo, but you've already committed to the Yuumi. So what are you going to do? Like, are you going to go, there's no Lucian, there's no Zeri, there's no Ezreal. All these are banned. Like, they've drafted themselves into a pretty big corner where it's like, great, well, now I get to shoot Twitch ult into a wind wall and lose lane.
Yes, and also early game Twitch is very weak. Early game Yasuo is very strong, if played correctly. So yeah, I thought it was really good drafting overall from a team that has been very weird with their drafting in the past, but this season have been overall pretty good. I think they've always had a pretty good read on the meta, and they've kind of followed Gen G's lead a lot of the time, but still, I'm liking what we're seeing from them, and I think we do have to have a small conversation about Canyon's performance this season. I think most people are saying
inconsistent, for sure.
It's inconsistent. Like, I wouldn't call him a bad jungler by any means. Like, that's not fair. I think people hold him to such a high standard that some people are saying that, but I think it's just because they're upset because they're one of their favorite jungler players is not having a greatest season.
I'm upset.
But I do think that he is, him falling means so much for Damwon Kia's roster because they are so reliant on him, and Showmaker is so reliant on him, and Duckdown and Kellum have somewhat become reliant on him in this meta. So when he is not performing to the levels that we expect from him, Damwon Kia as a result looks significantly weaker, and he hasn't actually been inconsistent like this in like 2 years. So it's very odd, and I think it's not a strong meta for him, which is weird because in the past he has been extremely good in metas like this, but it's almost like he's bored of playing the same champions. He doesn't want to play Wukong Viego, and he has avoided playing Wukong Viego as much as he can this season, but now it's time to be like, all right, well, this is how it is, man. This is the meta. You're going to have to play it. You're going to have to camp as Trundle. It is going to be boring. You're going to have to do Malrang things, and that's just how it's going to be. And I think he's probably going to come around, but I've been saying it for a long time. I think Damwon Kia's biggest win this year will be if they make Worlds, which is the expectation. I think they will look very good at Worlds because they have experimented so much with so many different styles, and they're not meta slaves.
Yeah, I mean, they're also sitting at 8-4, so they're still ahead in DR against, you know, above DRX in the standings, and they're 8-2 against teams that are not DRX. Like, this team just seems to have their number. They're also playing kind of dumb against, like, their drafts have been bad, and they've lost 2-1 both times. And you have to think that if their draft in game one of both series was better, that they probably, they would have definitely had a better chance to win. I'm not going to say they would have won, but they did paint themselves into a corner both times. So I think if you consider a playoff series, you might think that that could go the other way. And at least with Damwon, they it looked like they were getting back on track with the Aphelios pickups that we were discussing last week, although they were curb stomping bad teams. And then, yeah, it's like they've gotten through a pretty soft part of their schedule, but they did it with flying colors, and they come up against DRX again and struggle. But I think at least they're trying and they're starting to be successful in defining their style, because that's been the biggest thing, is that they haven't really identified the way they want to play the game. It's an embarrassment of riches. They have too many possibilities of all of these flex picks and everything that they can do, all the crazy shit that they can pull off. And I think that stunts them in a way. And I think the proper way to play this meta is to focus on Dokdom, let Noguri play weak side, like we said last week. Noguri's a fantastic weak side player, and just play a high pressure style with Showmaker roaming and Canyon just camping bot. I think that's what you do.
I think you and I are super mind linked on our thoughts on this, because I just feel like they have so many things they could do and they can't decide what their style is and what they want to do, which is again why I think once we find out what the playoffs patch is going to be and what the Worlds patch is going to be, I'm assuming they're going to be like, all right, that's it. This is our style. We're going to double down on this. Like, this is where we're going to win another Worlds title. Like, we have to prepare for this. Like, this is how we're going to play. And then we'll actually see them. This is my hope as well. Like, they might just continue to be like, we can do anything. But if they actually then say, all right, this is the meta. This is what we're going to do. We're going to excel at it and master it. I think that's could be good for them, because if you remember what happened to Damwon in MSI last year, it was a terrible meta for them. It was the exact opposite champions were meta in jungle for Canyon, and he really struggled. Like, the Morgana meta was not kind to him, the Rumble Morgana, sure. Like, all of that. Like, that was not his meta. So I think, like, there is a little bit of PTSD almost in his mind. It's like, I cannot tunnel vision on only this meta because it could change in two patches time, and then I'll be screwed again because I'm not prepared for that. Like, some players have to be extremely, what's the word for this? Like, some players have to be super hands-on on a champion to master it and be, like, constantly playing it. And if the realm of what they are practicing in solo queue, if they miss it, like, they're just so out of practice. Like, some people, like, I'm this type of person. Like, if I don't play League for 6 months and I come back, I'm not just like, oh, it's just like riding a bike. I'm like, ooh, it's going to take a few weeks for me to get back into it. That's the kind of person that I am. And I think Kanye is a very similar type of player, so he's trying to make sure he's like kind of ready for any meta. That's my theory on this.
Yeah, it's fair, and I at least in the next couple of weeks, they will have some good tests, although it's not going to be this next week when they play up against KT and Hanwha. Although KT might be able to give them a run for their money, but the week after that is Live Sandbox and Gen G. And then the week after that is T1 and Kwangdong. So their hardest matches are going to be at the end, which is going to tell us a lot because that's going to show us the form they're into playoffs. They're probably going to have to win some of those matches to get a good playoff seed. I don't think they can drop all three unless they completely wipe out everyone else heading into it. I still think it'll be a little bit tough. Before we break down why, and Wolf and I will have a little argument about who we think is going to win the T1 versus Gen G series, I'm a glutton for punishment, even though Gen G lost last time. I'm going to go ahead and predict them again. Right now, they're slight underdogs. I'm not super confident, though. I'm only going to put 1,000 DJT on this match. I learned from my mistake last time. Really looking forward to this match this next week. A good one because the odds are basically 50-50 between these two teams right now. So head on over to esportsbet.io. Make your prediction.
Should we talk about the T1 Gen G series next week?
Yes, we can talk about that. We've reached the apex of Mount Olympus. Who lives at the top of Mount Olympus, Wolf?
T1 and Gen G.
No, in Greek mythology. Zeus? Yes, there Zeus. You. Thank you. It's all coming together.
No, I knew. I was like, should I say Zeus or Zeus? Because we have to. I don't want to have this conversation anymore. But
so yes, that's where the gods all live right now. Gen G and T1, pretty definitively the best teams in this region. Even though T1 stumbles a little bit more, they've lost four games or seven games compared to three from Gen G, but crucially, two of Gen G's game losses came to T1, which honestly is very impressive when you think about Gen G's performance. They have made it through more than one round robin, and two of their three games they lost to T1, and the other one who'd they lose to?
It was a KT, I want to say.
Damwon. They lost to Damwon.
That's right. Yeah, that was also a three-gamer. Yep. That was a wacky series, yeah.
They've been just incredibly consistent, Gen G, and this is why they continue to be the favorites, because when they're against teams that should be worse than them, they frequently stomp them, or even in a close game, they will still find a way to win. But their ability to be creative, to snowball, to play the meta, looks top tier. Meanwhile, for all you T1 fans who love to hate on people who criticize the team, what's frustrating about T1 is that they'll drop games to kind of bad teams and do it in bad ways. But the clutch factor is just so crazy for T1 that somehow they make the play. Like, it doesn't matter that Lee Sin might not be that great in the late game. Owner will still make some jaw-dropping Lee Sin play. Or Zeus will come in with the Gnar and get the perfect ultimate. So they use these tools, these playmaking tools that they have very, very well. And they have incredible mental resiliency to come back from some of these losses against opponents that I think they know they probably shouldn't be losing to and pull off the win. So even though they may play to the level of their opponents at times in a way that Gen G does not, they have had an extremely high ceiling. And it is that clutch factor that won them the series against Gen G. To revisit that, if Faker doesn't TP in, use Spellbook to change his TP to Smite and then steal that Baron. It is over, Gen G 2-0. So,
yeah. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but from an analyst perspective,
like, it's frustrating because you're like, this team shouldn't be winning. But at the same time, you cannot deny that they possess this clutch factor that allows them to pull these wins out of their asses.
So, on the other part, the other LCK podcast, we do the Pog State, which is not out yet, but I'll spoil part of it here because this one comes out faster. I actually predicted T1 to win the series, shockingly to you probably, because you at the beginning said like you already know like Wolf's gonna pick Gen G.
Get it out. Why?
So in that Freda Brion series, I thought about it a lot even as I was casting that Freda Brion series. It's like, man, this really changes the landscape going to that series next week. But The things that went wrong for T1 in that series, and I think Fred Abrion played very well, as we've talked about earlier in this episode, the things that Owner did that were not smart, and like his overextensions that we saw and some very poor misplays from Faker, I think these are all small things that T1 can fix easily with just reviewing some tape and being like, hey, like, let's remember our win conditions. Let's remember we're not actually 6,000 gold ahead, Owner. Like, you can't just go back on 1v5 the enemy team and chase them. They will just turn on you and kill you. The mistakes we saw there, I think, are really easy to fix. I've been, like, really misquoted on this series, by the way. Please stop harassing me, T1 fans, in my DMs and mentions on Twitter. Like,
no, keep harassing.
I'm getting very tired of it.
Send a truck to his house.
please, it's not cool, it's not funny, like, leave me alone. I've been misquoted on, like, the things I said there. I really think I said, basically, if you're trying to say you're the best team in the LCK, like, you really have to prove it against Gen G in that series next week, because otherwise, like, Gen G have been the cleaner team during regular season. Now, in the first round robin, that was, I think, extremely so the case. Now in the second round robin, Gen G has been cleaner in terms of their game score and how they've closed games out. They had the fastest game of the LCK, etc. They've been more dominant. But I think that T1 have figured out their style. Guma is drawing a lot of extra bans on things like Draven. And I think if you look at where the strong points are, both of these teams, I think the jungle is really interesting because I think Owner is the better hands player and makes more heroic plays, but I think Peanut is the smarter jungler. Like, I think he understands the meta better. I think he understands pathing better. I think that he, as you mentioned earlier, has been kind of a meta definer. Like, he made the Poppy a thing. Owner is just, like, not even touching that champion. He's not even interested. I think he's played one game of Poppy so far this season. And there's that. I think Doran versus Zayas on the top side, that's a huge mismatch for Doran. I think that's a huge strength. Like, you have...
Really? Doran's been playing a lot better than I think.
Okay, better? Yes, he has been playing better, but he is the weakest part of Gen G versus the strongest part of...
That's fair.
T1, arguably the strongest player in the whole region. Some people are saying in the world, but, you know, time will tell on that one. And then the strength of Gen G in the bottom 2v2, like Ruler and Lehens, are definitely stronger than Guma, Caria. But the level in which they're stronger, I feel like, doesn't matter as much right now in this meta. In the same way, I think Chovy is laning way better than Faker is and is playing more aggressively than Faker is, but I think that advantage won't matter as much as Owner's playing so extremely clean in a meta where, like, he can just pop off on Lee Sin, like you said, and have those clutch moments, and he is having them consistently. Zayas also much stronger than Doran in a meta where, like, a Gnar ultimate can just win you a team fight. Doesn't matter if this is a scaling AD carry meta, if Zayas just actually shapes the battlefield like a literal god, as he has so many times, even with the Gangplank ultimate, with the Gangplank barrel chain. And the more I think about, like, why I wanted to initially predict Gen G, I'm like, yeah, but I just don't think Ruler is going to get it done in the late game. Like, I don't think he will do that.
I think he will. All right, I'm gonna counter some of your points right now. Yes, we probably will have to see some... There are going to be some pocket bans that happen in this series. Probably, as you say, one of them is going to be the Draven. That's a very common ban. Because I think that if you are Gen G, you want to opt into a late game scaling hyper carry bot lane festival, right? Like, you want that. Ruler's been the better player when it comes to these picks so far this season compared to Gumayushi. So just get rid of the Draven. Or, I mean, you could do some other things like let them first pick Draven, or I don't think they're going to blind pick it. That's dumb. But if you do, there are counters that you can pull out, like MF. So either you let it through with a plan where you're on red side and you really want to save that AD carry as a counter pick. But again, I don't think that's likely to happen. One of the main problems I think you're going to see on T1's side is that they don't play Poppy, and Poppy is extremely strong. You will have to ban the Poppy. They tried not banning the Poppy the last time they played. They got completely flattened by Poppy in game one. So that's going to be an absolute must ban, I think, as well. So we have a couple of picks that are strong in this meta that these teams are just not, you know, they're not equipped to play super well. On the other side of things too, I think probably we're not going to see a lot of top lane bans. It'll probably be Gnar GP. I think teams that Doran and Zayas are happy to handshake into this matchup, and I don't think that you're going to see a lot of variation there. Maybe the Sejuani comes out or some other weird pick. Maybe the Ornn comes out. Possibility. I think you'll probably see the Seraphine band on the side of Gen G. I don't think they want to play Seraphine, and I think that T1 may, in fact, make that decision. So perhaps there are a few more bands that you might think of coming out of Gen G. But to me, the main problem is this, and it's a playstyle issue, which is that even though Gumayushi has like a 75%+ win rate over the course of his career on Aphelios, his Aphelios hasn't been good.
Not that great. Yeah, it hasn't been very good this season. It really has not.
It's his most played champion of all time. And remember, Gumayushi's a pretty new player, so he only has 36 games. And he has a 77.8% win rate. But they haven't been playing through it.
Yeah, and they have not been using it. And he's been losing with it on the rare times they play.
Yeah, so I'm concerned about that because I think Deft will be happy to play a Jinx into an Aphelios matchup, which Jinx is one of Deft's signature champions. And Deft is also a very good Aphelios player, but I think he prefers Jinx. So
you mean Ruler, right?
Oh, Ruler. Like, Ruler. Yes.
Deft also. Those two things are pretty true about Deft as well. But
yes. No. Ruler. Yeah. Sorry about that. Misspoke.
That's fine.
So, I mean, I'm looking at this, and I think that Gen G just does a much better job of playing through their bot lane at the current point in time, and that they can reach these late game states. And I think the meta really just favors Gen G if they play through bot lane, because it's not that I don't think Gumayushi can play these champions, because that was basically all spring was him just like spamming Jinx and carrying these late game fights. It's certainly possible. But the difference is that Faker is starting to move back into more Galio and Lissandra and these roaming
utility,
mids
that
can help out the bottom lane. But it's not, I don't think it's ideal. I don't think it's ideal, the ideal way to play right now. And they haven't been as successful at propping Gumayushi up. And Gumayushi is still making a lot of mistakes and positioning kind of badly. He's not as good as Ruler is this season. And I think that there is a finite limit to how hard or how clutch T1 can be. And as the meta tilts more in favor of Ruler just absolutely dominating and playing champions that he's going to be super comfortable on, it's hard for me to see how Zayas and Owner are going to, and Faker are going to win another best of three, because they should not have been able to do that in the first one.
So some points, like I do agree with basically everything you said. I think that minus the like finite clutchness, but I don't want to get too much into that, because like, how can we analyze clutchness? Like, that's not what we're here to do. We're not going to like tell you guys a fairy tale about why T1. I'm not going to be like, well, actually, like, Faker was the GOAT, and that is why they will win. That is my official prediction. Some analysts do that, but I'm not going to do that. But yeah, I think that one thing that we have to discuss is the lack of clutch for Ruler. Like, he is the better AD carry in lane, like you said, but his late game play when they're on an even game state or behind has often been extremely greedy, and he's often a player who is caught and punished in the late game, has a lot of isolated deaths. Not this season as much as in previous seasons, because they're winning all their games and they're winning them fast, so we don't actually usually see those even game states, which is why when they're pushed to the brink by a team like Live Sandbox and pushed to the brink by a team like T1, sometimes we get to these moments where Ruler just gets caught. That's what we call these the Ruler moment, or like the Ruler place where he gets caught, like around Raptors. And because T1 are playing these comps where you have so many kill threats for the AD carry, I think Ruler, even though he is by far the better AD carry player right now in this meta, I completely agree with you. Will he be greedy or make a mistake? Like, will Gen G just flub it in the late game? Like, I think there's high chances in a high variant series like this that they will. Also, we have to consider that I think Gnar is much stronger than Gangplank right now. Although they're both very strong, and Zayas has been fantastic on both. And Doran has been okay on both. But I think that it's a Gnar meta where Gnar is going to be prioritized more. And going to the series, unlike last time, T1 will also have side selection. So That's another, that was another thing that yesterday where I was like, oh, I'm still on the fence. And then I realized that and I was like, I have to predict T1. In this meta where side selection is so strong, Sylas basically guarantees you, if you're on blue side, you get Sylas, it guarantees you you're going to get.
I was going to bring up Sylas.
Sylas.
Here's the difference. Here's the difference, though, is that Chovy is a much better Sylas player than Vakerit.
And I agree with that too, but will he get it ever? I don't know. I mean, he's only going to get it one set of the three games, right? Because he's just not going to get it that blue side pick. Like,
it depends on what T1's strategy are. I mean, if they don't ban it, it certainly could fall over, and they want to prioritize Gnar, it certainly could fall over to the red side first rotation. And Sylas was not a factor in the game the last time these two teams played. Like, the rise of Sylas was kind of an answer to the Corki Azir handshake, which is like, okay, let's take something that may not take as long to scale as Corki, but still provides a lot of utility. And also, because in a world where teams are picking Azir Gnar, and you can just pick between those two ultimates which one you want to have, it's pretty damn strong. So I don't know. I think the Sylas is definitely another factor. If you look at power picks right now, and we kind of list them out, I don't think that T1 is particularly good at playing Kalista. I think Seraphine goes over to T1 in terms of favor for them. Azir for me goes to Gen G. And I would say most of the strong AD carry picks, Jinx, Zeri, probably goes in Gen G's favor as well. Poppy definitely in Gen G's favor. And then maybe you say top laners in favor of T1, so it's close, but I think a lot of the power picks, I think Gen G is better with them than T1.
Yeah, and I do wonder, like, what Gen G is going to get as a result when they get to play blue side, because if T1 win game one on blue side, then Gen G will have their chance to play something like a Sylas for Chovy. But if you have to ban Sylas against Faker on red side, then, and like, again, even if he's the weaker Sylas player, like, it's not going to be a mirror matchup. It's going to be Faker playing Sylas into whatever Genji's comp is going to be.
But here's the thing, there's also the Ryze, right? And the Ryze has come up as a counter to Sylas. And yeah. I would take Chovy in both sides of the Sylas Ryze matchup right now.
I would too, because I think, like, he is the better player at the moment.
Yeah.
In general. And this is what I was saying in the earlier too, is like, yeah, Ruler, Chovy, these parts, and Peanut, like, these parts are, in Peanut is the odd one, because Peanut is smarter than Owner, I think, but not better hands, you know, like, yep. Mechanically Owner is stronger, but like, with the mid and bottom, I think T1 do not have the strong power there. Like, they're not going to, like, Ruler is better than Guma right now. Lehens and Karia, like, that doesn't matter as much. And then Faker is not as good as Chovy at the moment at really any of the meta champions. Might be better at, like, Lissandra than Chovy, but Chovy's not really playing it. So, yeah, like, maybe the Ryze counter comes through, but I don't want to predict based on, like, what we might see in terms of, like, a specific pocket counter pick, because then, like, T1 might draft around the Ryze, or they might do something completely different. I just think having the ability to grab Sylas Gnar, but having the topside control, like, a free Gnar pick, or, like, a free counter to Gnar if they end up picking the Gnar away, like, into the Sylas, which would be, I think, a terrible choice for Gen G. It means that you have to ban the Sylas on red side, which means that maybe then Guma gets to play as Draven. You know, there's a lot of things that actually happen in the draft because of that blue side power right now. Also, you can't play around Peanut on these power picks in the bottom 2v2 as well on red side. Blue side is way stronger because you can take away the blue buff, you can control bottom Scuttle, you can control bottom Drake, like, These aspects of Peanut's play have been much stronger, obviously, on blue side, even though he's pulled it off on red many times, because Gen G have to play half their games on red because they win game one and then have to play it on red side. But these are things that, like, I've really thought about a lot. And I think if you asked me, like, how much out of 100 are you on T1, I'd say, like, 55. Like, I'm not really saying, like, well, this sure. is like, oh, man, T1 smashed this, but
this
I'm saying, like, maybe 55, 45.
Sure. Yeah, it's very hard to predict because these teams, and this is why it's fun to discuss this matchup, is because they have really different identities as teams. And you saw that come into play. It was like Draven, Pyke, Lissandra for T1 last time. And it was, you know, Azir, Poppy, Jinx for Gen G. So it's these teams have really different styles and have reached the top of the league. They tied in terms of the standings. Gen G, I guess, is technically number one right now because they have a better map score, basically, like better individual game score. They've won the same number of games, obviously, because you have to win two games to win a series, right? But they've lost different numbers of games. Three games for Gen G and seven for T1. So certainly going to be a banger, guys.
I'm glad that we disagree because that makes it more fun for me. Because I get to like text you when it's over and be like, "All right, this is what happened."
Yeah. And unfortunately, guys, I have to go to a wedding and travel next week, so we are not going to have a show next week, which is a bummer. Right after this match happens, but we will catch up the week after. Back for another version of the Monty and Wolf show. I'm sure there many tweets will be made about it. You guys will have plenty of opportunities to hear our opinions, but I'm not going to be able to watch the games in a timely manner. So we'll be back week after next, and that'll be right before playoffs. We'll be getting into the final stretch. So be sure not to miss it then. We'll see you guys later.